My name's Trevor Bowen. I'm a deputy head at Armonbury High School and Language College in Huddersfield. In terms of assessment for learning, I think there are some important things that teachers must do. The most important thing a teacher must do is plan a lesson really, really well. In planning a lesson, you take into account the nature of all the children that are in the room, but also you set out doing two or three key things. One is that you set up what the learning intentions for that lesson is. So the children are signposted very, very, very early on as to what you intend to do with that lesson. Once you have signposted what you're going to do, you then have to create a climate in the classroom. I have three rules in my classroom that are used by Professor Dylan William, and I can tell you, I know for a fact, make a great deal of difference. One is that no child is allowed to put their hand up unless they're asking me a question. In other words, I decide which child gets asked a question. And that's a really effective way of differentiating in the classroom, because you ask different children different questions. But also, every child thinks at any moment they're going to be asked a question. So it brings every child into the lesson and they're engaged. The second thing I have is that when they do answer a question, they're not allowed to say, "I don't know." They must give an answer. By saying "I don't know," sometimes that means "I don't care." And by saying "I don't know," they are opting out of the lesson. They're retreating from it. The pressure's off them. So if you insist on getting an answer, and if you have to move to another child and come back to them, that way they know they're engaged in it all the time. The other thing that is more difficult to try and get in a classroom, but I have as well, is it's okay to get things wrong. Children are very, very worried about making mistakes. And that takes a lot longer to create a climate where they can make mistakes. And you say to them, it's all right to make mistakes, learn from your mistakes, because at this moment in time, you're not being finally assessed for it. And actually, when you get to the final assessment, and we do lots of staging along the way, if you make a mistake then, well, then that will count towards your final grade. But at this moment in time, when you're in a classroom and you're exploring your ideas and your understandings and your misunderstandings, it's perfectly okay to make mistakes. And by doing that, I think you draw everybody in to the lesson. Lesson structures are quite important. It's very important that there's not too much teacher talk. You've got about 5 minutes, in my opinion, to hook children into the learning that you're doing that day. They've been on the playground, they've been playing, now it's a lesson. You've got about 5 minutes to draw them in with either a description of where this lesson sits in the scheme of things or what the intentions of that lesson were. Then if you're going to give them any new information, you probably don't want to go beyond about 10 minutes. Once you go beyond 10 minutes, children start to become a bit restless, they're not listening as effectively, and then you spend the vast majority of the time getting children to demonstrate back to you what they know and understand. Now, this is the difficult bit with what assessment for learning is all about. It's very draining for a teacher to do this, but it's absolutely the most important thing you do. You take feedback from the children almost constantly throughout the lesson, and adjust your teaching accordingly. So you reshape the teaching dependent on what the children tell you they understand or they don't understand. Simple techniques are things like, they all have a little mini whiteboard, you ask them a question. That's why questioning is so important. You have to think about the sorts of questions you're going to ask them before you start. But you ask them a question, and the idea about asking that question is, do you get this or don't you? If you do get it, and I get a series of answers, once they have been given the whiteboard and I ask the question, I say, write your answer down. It's usually a one-word or two-word answer, and hold it up for everybody to see. And as a teacher, you can scan the room very, very quickly and make a decision. They've either got this or they haven't. If they've got it, move on then. Even if your lesson plan for that day had lots of other things to do to reinforce the learning, if they've got it, they've got it, and move on. But if they haven't got it, then you need to reshape that lesson to reinforce the learning. All the techniques that he has, in my opinion, engage pupils in an interactive way. Simple things like, think about what the whole lesson is about in one question and give it to them as they walk through the door. Now, if they've got it, then that lesson is finished. You know, they give you an answer on a piece of paper, you take them in, you read them very quickly, you choose a child to explain why they've written what they've written, and the lesson is over. However, if they haven't got it, you can see all the misconceptions in what they're saying. Another way that's probably more powerful is to give them that lesson as they leave. And then you collect in their answers, you look at what they understand or don't understand, and then you use that to shape the lesson following. I'll give you a typical example. I am a science teacher. So I once had a girl who believed that we have day and night because the Earth is part of a pivot. The sun is at one end of a seesaw, the moon is at the other. And during a day, the sun rises on this seesaw and falls at night. It's a model that's not quite right, but it meets her experience. And then when you say to her, have you ever seen the moon and the sun in the sky at the same time? That model would then collapse and she would then reshape that. No, she hadn't. So at that point, you're trying to get beneath the learning to where the misconceptions are, because it's not just about being able to answer an exam question, it's about dealing with children's understanding of the nature of the subject, and that's quite difficult. Other things that are really, really powerful are things like giving children other children's work to mark and asking them to mark each other's work in a way where it is based around the exam board and the assessment criteria. So they learn two things. One is that this is what the examiner is looking for when they're marking your work. But secondly, I want you to set this child some targets here next to you that is based on what you think is good and the strengths of the work and the work that they need to improve. And we have a little golden rule, which is it's two stars and a wish. Two strengths, one weakness, simple little thing that the children can learn and then give it out to them. And they write on the bottom of the children's work, two strengths and something that they could do to improve it. In terms of written feedback, what I've found is this. If you give a child a grade, children are addicted to grades. If you give them a grade, they don't read anything beyond it. So when you are marking their work, you've got two choices. If you want to grade their work, I would hold back the grade. I would give out the comments, and the comments should be informative about the strengths of the work and how they should improve it, and give them the grade later. In other words, make them read the comment you've made, because that will make the biggest difference to their work. Or another good way of doing it is to get them into a group of children and hand out randomly, if you like, within the group, your comments for their work and say which comment matches your work then. And again, you get a discussion around the strengths and weaknesses of the work. Written feedback has to be interactive. If it's just a teacher making comments on the work that the child never reads, then the child does not take that further in terms of assessment for learning. The final thing I think is ultimately this, in terms of a hierarchy. If you can get children to self-assess, in other words, they can tell you what they think they know and what they understand. Self-assessment is really important at the start of the work, start of a module of work, where you learn what they know already, build on that, but also at the end of the work, where they can see the progress they've made, so that you say to them, this is what you understood at the start of all this, this is now what you understand at the end of all this, can't you see the progress you've made? And by the way, you say you understand all of this, but you don't understand that. Well, that then is the target for the work to improve even further. And I think that's a really, really important part of what they say. So questioning is crucial, that you ask good questions that actually probe for the depth of knowledge and understanding, and that you use your questioning to decide whether or not a child understands something or not. And if they do, you move on. And if they don't, you reinforce. With SEN pupils, here's the key thing. Literacy opens the door to begin with for all children. Everywhere in my classroom, there are keywords displayed. We will have almost quite old-fashioned, if you like, tests of what those keywords mean. Children are given those keywords at the start of a unit, regularly tested throughout it all, and special needs children particularly need a match between what they know and understand in terms of keywords and then trying to help them to expand their writing throughout the unit. But the keyword, if you don't understand the meaning of the word photosynthesis, you can't then answer a question on it. And there needs to be a lot of time spent by the teacher reinforcing it all the time. One of the things I have, which is something I picked up from Accelerated Learning from Alistair Smith, it's a brilliantly simple idea. What you do is you create what they call a learning mat. It has to be coloured because the right-hand side of the brain works on colour. It has to include words because the left-hand side of the brain works on words. And what you do is you draw a diagram or you write down all the information that you want the children to learn for that module, and you print it on a coloured mat and you laminate it and stick it on the desk. And every time they come into the lesson, that mat is there. They then put their exercise book on top of it. And all the time that they're working, they sort of, you can imagine this, scan off the page sometimes, or sometimes they may be a little distracted, and they're reading all of the information that you want them to learn over a 10-week period. And it reinforces that all of the time. And of course, down each side of the mat is all of the words that you want them to know, right from the very beginning, and you can use it in all sorts of different ways. But the key thing for special needs for me is about literacy, really, in terms of my subject area, them knowing what the words mean and helping them to answer exam questions fully by knowing what the mark scheme bit is. And that's where the assessment for learning works. And you can be very skillful about how you pair children together or group them. You know, there are all sorts of ways of grouping them, of similar ability, of very different ability. And often it's said that you wouldn't necessarily put a more able child with a less able child because the more able child needs to be extended. But actually, when you ask a more able child to teach a less able child, because they understand it and they don't, teaching is one of the ways where you understand yourself whether or not you've got it. And that reinforces it for the more able learner. And the final thing we've done a lot of work here on, which works very, very well for special needs children, but all children, is that we have a boy-girl seated policy in the school. A boy must sit next to a girl in every lesson they're in. And it's very, very simply this. Boys and girls are equally descriptive, but girls are more reflective than boys. If you ask a boy how they feel, they shut up and won't speak, whereas a girl is more likely to be open. And if you put a boy and a girl together, you end up with what I describe as a perfect learner. Because then finally, boys are very speculative. They like to take risks. Girls don't take as many risks or don't like to take risks. So you've got the two together. You've got a descriptive learner who's learning from each other about reflection and finally learning from each other about risk-taking. And you'll get girls to take risks that they wouldn't ordinarily take if they're sat next to a boy, because what girls like to do is to be quite comfortable. They like to get all the stuff together, understand what they have to do, and then start. And boys don't like to talk about feelings. And if you put those two things together, you bring all the children into the learning. That would be assessment for learning for me.